G. AG, that is. Because it's the news, according to me. Good morning. And a fine, happy morning to you. Top of the morning to you this morning. It's, what is it today? Thursday? Is it already Thursday? It's already Thursday. That means the weekend's coming and I got to travel again. So maybe not. This is one that I might possibly get out of this week. I don't know. Who knows? I doubt it. They never give me a break. Because of what's in my cup. This is hot chocolate this morning. It was a hot chocolate morning. I haven't had hot chocolate in the morning. Oh, it's been probably a week since I've had hot chocolate in the morning. I don't know if any of you can tell the difference between whether I'm drinking hot chocolate or drinking hot tea. I have noticed a difference in my show. It affects my show. I'm a little bit more mellow when I'm drinking hot chocolate. And I don't talk quite as fast. When I'm drinking tea with sugar, honey, and coconut oil in it, apparently I talk a little faster. Apparently. So, take that for what it is. I was always told that sugar slowed down your brain, but I apparently dairy products laced with chocolate are the thing that slow down your brain. So anyway, I digress. Got a lot of stuff I want to talk about today. I'm just going to jump right into it because I don't know. This weekend I was going to get to that that whole travel thing. I got traveling to do, and I'm not sure if. In fact, I'm going to check here. I'm just going to look in on my schedule. Let's just see what this thing says. Oh, this probably won't work because it's got the wrong password in it now. Because you got to change a password every 90 days. Because racism. There we go. Update that. Let's look at my schedule here. It's still there. And it's still there. Yeah. Looks like I'll be traveling this weekend. So, not sure where I will be at this point. Looks like I'll be in Charleston, West Virginia. And I will also be in... Columbia. Wish I was in Colorado. That could happen. But Columbia, Missouri looks like I'll be there as well. Uh-huh. So, I got that going for me. The I'm hoping to drop some of that. See what happens. They won't let me get out of any of that traveling stuff. There's too much money involved. Yeah. Big money. Big dollars. Big money. So I had warned you guys a while back about the de facto. I might even title this podcast probably will have that something along the lines of the Attorney General. This is pretty serious stuff, actually, and this is why I'm interested in. I wonder if I can hook up my phone to this thing and play a video because it is. I think I can. I'm a little engine that could. A lot of you kids will not even remember that. I'm going to attach this, I believe. See if I can do this. Yes, here we go. Bluetooth on. Connect. There we go. Okay. I want to play this video, and hopefully it will... Video. Yeah, it's a video. You'll just hear the audio. It's all you need to hear. And this was a report given by Facts Matter, Roman at Facts Matter. And he's a little pit bull when it comes to going after stories. He just is relentless. And I appreciate his detail and the level at which they do their job. He's with the Epic Times. However you want to pronounce it, I call it Epic. Epic. Epic Times. Epoch. 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 He recently talked about this a little bit. We'll get into that a little bit later. But in the meantime, the AG, Garland, as I had earlier forecast accurately, much better than most weathermen, the level at which Garland is operating under. This guy is he is as left of a leftist with regard to being on board with the agenda. He is the henchman of the squad, in my opinion. Just that group of people who have this radical leftist Saul Alinsky, Cloward and Piven type philosophy. And he is totally on board with that. I don't know if he realizes, he's got to realize it. No, he, in my opinion, he probably got to where he is at by rubbing elbows with the right people and saying, I will do your bidding to be in the position with all the power. And I will get into more details about this, and it's quite alarming how this all comes together and how it fits together in terms of how they're manipulating, using the system to get their agenda accomplished. And they do have an agenda, folks. You see, there shouldn't be an agenda. The only agenda should be to preserve and protect our rights as individuals. That's a very simple. The reason that the Congress isn't in session 24 hours a day is because that is basically the purpose of the Congress, is that they are to uphold and defend the rights we already have. It was as if the founders gave us the roadmap to an ever-increasing liberty in this country. And the leftists and the powers that be have this continual effort to chip away at our individual rights, liberties, dignity, honor, and respect. They want to be our parents. They want to make our decisions for us. They want to take care of us, so to speak, from cradle to grave. One of the things that I have noticed that children coming out of school, there's no class on personal finance. I don't know of any class. Maybe they teach it now, but when I was growing up, as I was a kid, there was no talk of how to manage your money. You know, if it was, it was a simple little math problem that maybe came up twice in a year. Okay, you have $27. You need to buy 5 apples. Each apple is 29 cents. That's what it was back when I was a kid. Probably less than that. You have to pay a 7% tax. Back then it was like 1%. How much will it cost you? And how much money will you have left over? I don't even think, come to think of it, I can't even remember a question like that. Pretty simple question, really. And a pretty, everyday kind of thing happening kind of question. And yet, I don't remember any of those questions coming up on a math problem. Maybe they did. But I don't remember it. And I typically remember that kind of stuff. You know, a really good question for math in a math book now would be this. It would be, Betty has to work 2 hours. No, this would be better. It's be even better. Betty makes $10 an hour. Or let's make it a different number. $9.87 an hour. Let's make it more difficult. This would be the advanced mathematician stuff. How many hours does Betty have to work to purchase 3 pairs of shoes at Payless? The shoes are, one shoe is $26.74. The other shoe is $87.24. And there's a pair of, I don't know, what do you call them? Slip-flops for $8.42. There is a 5% sales tax. The Payless shoe store is 4.7 miles from her home. And she has to drive her car that we earlier figured out in an earlier program, earlier question, costs her 28.7 cents per mile to operate. Including all the insurance, taxes, license, fees, maintenance. We figured that all out earlier too. That was in another program. How many hours will she have to work to pay for those shoes? That would be a question that would actually make sense and give kids a realistic view of what's going on with their money. And even kind of express in a background way, in an indirect way, the value of a dollar. Is your life worth the 10.32 hours that you're going to have to work to pay for all that stuff? I just figured it out in my head. Ironically, we do not teach kids that stuff at all. We don't explain to them compound interest. We don't explain to them how getting them into debt. As soon as you get out of high school, then you need to take out a student loan. Unless you get a scholarship because you're one of the privileged kids. And by privilege, I don't mean white. Necessarily. There's all kinds of scholarships out there, and some of it has to do now, especially nowadays. Getting that scholarship has something to do with your skin color. But that's not prejudice, is it? So, we go through this stuff. And we find that our kids, they go into debt for school. Not all of them do, but a lot of them go into debt for a car, because the car dealerships are not car dealerships anymore. They are banks. They want to get you into financing. They don't care about the car. We'll just find a car for you, and we'll see if you qualify for the financing. We'll max you out on the financing all we can. We'll get as much a big a payment as we can on you. Look at the car we can put you in for, you know, this much a month. Now, and the reason I know this is because my wife and I, we recently, it was probably 20 years ago, we had the first time ever we had some cash in our bank, and we decided let's go out and buy a car. We're going to buy a couple of new cars. We're going to pay cash. And we are going to knock them down the price as much as we possibly can. Now I love the competition of walking away from the table. In other words, I'll make an offer, and I am not, you know, I know for a fact that there are a lot of cars out there. And if that dealer doesn't want to sell me that car, I'll find another one. Thank you very much. I'm not going to fall in love with that car. I might fall in love with that type of car, but I have the power to walk away, and because I don't have the money to pay for it. But I will walk away. That's the deal. I think I might have told you this story before. Wife and I had a friend. This was back. This was back in the day. I think this might have been back in the 90s even. I was kind of known to be the kind of guy who would go in and, you know, among my friends, I was the guy who was known to go in and get a deal on a car. And I did it. I proved it several times. A friend of mine was looking at an $11,000. This is back in 1984. Was looking at an $11,000 car. They wanted to finance him for him. I went with him. We drove the car around. Nice car. 19-year-old kid. They were going to give him an $11,000 loan. It was like $500 down. Or $1,000, whatever he had down. He was going to walk. He was going to drive the car away that day. I said, let's go look around and see what else we can find. We went and found this other car. It was a used car. It wasn't a brand new one. The one he was looking at was brand new. We're looking at this used car. I said, let me show you what we can do here. The car was $8,000 on the lot. We went out, test drove it, came back. I told the dealer, I said, well, it's used, it's got a few problems. I said, I don't know if you noticed this or that, because, well, no, we didn't notice that, but the price was, you know, they always say the price was comparable to the car that's in that kind of condition. I said, okay, well, not to me, it's not worth that much. And I said, I will pay you today. I will offer you $5,500 for that car. Cash. I'll walk away. And he was like, oh, I don't know. Will you give it? So he came back. Can you give us seven? I was like, no, that's my deal. That's my offer. I'm not going to change. They came down to my price. And I said, okay, I got to talk it over with my wife and stuff, and walked out the door. Yeah, I was kind of playing. I don't know what I said. I said something like that. Oh, no, I didn't have a wife at that time. Oh, I don't know what I said. I said, okay, well, I'm going to go talk to somebody about it, and let's come see. We're going to get another car we're looking at. We're going to go see what's going to happen with that one. So I think that's what I said, actually. I've used the old, I got to talk to my wife about it, excuse several times. When I talk about purchasing something. You know why? Because I have to talk to my wife about it. Because I don't dare come home with that thing without talking to her. I did that once with a car. She pulled in the driveway, pulled in the garage, car sitting there. She didn't get out of her car for a long time. And the longer she sat there, the more I realized I was in trouble. Now, we owned that car for almost 25 years until it was a rust bucket. Gave it to my nephew. Didn't know it was a rust bucket. Gave it to my nephew. He kind of went through it. He was going to restore the thing. And it was pretty much junk. Yeah, lesson learned there on that one. So yes, I do. Actually, the reason I say I need to go talk to my wife about it is because I need to talk to my wife about it. So anyway, we get to this this point here where we have kids now who get into debt for school, a car, and of course, the good debt of a home. It has recently finally come to the attention of some, I'll call them economists and home counselor type people. They're starting to realize what's happening here. There is a concerted effort, and in fact, it actually is an effort from China, believe it or not, and other foreign entities, and even leftists in this country. They don't want you to own a property. They don't like people out there owning properties. They would like for all the property to be owned by a select group of people or a limited small number of people who just rent their properties. This was spoken very clearly back in the 80s, early 80s, by someone who was in charge of the IRS. Actually, it was in the 70s. I take that back. I'm sorry, the 90s. I'm sorry, because this was in the 90s, this was happening. This was under Clinton, the IRS, head of the IRS at that time. He was saying, you know, very clearly that we want everyone working for big business. They didn't like all the small businesses out there. They were going to do everything they could to eliminate small business because it made the IRS's job so much easier if they could just go to a few large companies, audit them, edit, you know, do whatever they needed to do with them and take care of everybody's paychecks, rather than all these little independent companies out there running around. And that was their goal. Their goal was to destroy or to get rid of, somehow limit the number of small businesses that were out there, independent operators, because it made their job easier. It centralized things. And that's what they, you know, that's what they want to do with homeownership now as well. Now, getting back to the whole car thing, wife and I went to buy this car, and we went in and we we said, well, they were asking, it was a leftover. It was a 2003, and we had just rolled into January. It was 2004. In fact, I'm sure of that. Because I had bought a truck brand new in 2003, and the truck was actually a 2004. However, I got a really good deal on it. I had to fly down to North Carolina to pick it up. But it was brand new off the lot. In fact, they met me at the airport, signed. I wired them the funds. I made a deal with them. I said, you know, I think they were asking, like, I don't know, it was $29,000, some ridiculous price. I gave them an offer way less than that. And I said, I will wire you the funds today, and I'll be down there tomorrow to pick it up. Oh, no, we can't take that price. They had all these excuses. I said, I didn't answer them. I just sat there. The next day, I got an email. My manager and I have been discussing this, and we decided that we will take this amount for the vehicle. Well, you know, now it's another day. Now I've got fewer days, and I was not planning on. This was right before Thanksgiving of 2003, and I said, "Well, I said I can try to make it down there. I've got an appointment this morning. I said I will wire you the funds, and I will be down there this evening about 7 o'clock." So they had a driver meet me at the airport. I literally had an appointment. I flew out of my hometown here, went to Chicago, flew from there down to, I think they were in Hickory, South Carolina, someplace, I don't know. And I went down into Charlotte, I believe is where I went. They showed up at the airport. I don't know where it was. And I signed the papers right there in the parking lot, drove away. Got home about, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, on Thanksgiving morning. Well, so my wife and I go in to buy this car for her. It was a Nissan, or as they say in Australia, Nissan. They don't know how to talk down there. We got in there, and we were talking to this guy, this kid, who was a salesman. And we test drove a couple of different cars. I was all about test driving cars. I still am. Sometimes I'll just pull in and test drive a car just because I want to drive it. No intention to buy the thing. So we test drove a couple different cars, and we're pretty much sold on a Pathfinder. At least I was. It was a vehicle that actually had a frame. See, the Xterra did not have a frame. It was a unibody car. That concerned me. You'll still see Pathfinders running around now. You will not see the old Xterras running around much anymore. So we had this, because any kind of damage is, the frame gets all screwed up. Because it's a unibody. Or the body gets all screwed up, whatever. So they rode a little bit rougher. They were a little bit more of it was a heavy-duty vehicle. A little bit more of a heavy duty. It's not what you'd call it, a heavy duty vehicle, but it's a little bit more heavy duty built, and a little bit larger inside. We drove the thing a little bit, really liked it, and seemed to be had good power, had good everything just seemed to be handled really well for the size of the car it was, especially. And so we, as we were walking back to the office. I said, well, our plan is to pay cash for this. He goes, oh. Because, well, we don't usually do cash anymore. We're more into the financing. He just kind of came out and said it that way. I don't think he was supposed to say that. So we went back, talked to him. He told us the price. Remember, this one's a leftover. This one's a 2003, and it's still sitting on their lot. And they want to move that stuff off. They want to get that stuff out of there. I said, well, this is what we're willing to pay you for it. He said, well, my manager is not here. He said, I can't accept that price. I don't know what to tell you. I said, how about I just leave that on the table and you let me know tomorrow or whenever the manager comes back. I said, the offer stands. So sure enough, the next morning, get a call. Hey, good news. Yeah, we can take that for that car. So I bet you can. So I said, we'll be over today. Went over, wrote him a check. And actually let us drive off with it after just writing him a check, which I thought was kind of weird. You see, the big thing with them is they want to sell financing, and that financing is built into the price of the car. Because a lot of it's 0% financing for 6 years. Now, I've got news for you. In 6 years, that car is not going to be worth what you owe on it. I guarantee you this. In 3 years, that car is not going to be worth what you owe on it. That's just built into the program. You will not be able to sell that car for what you owe on it for a long time because it depreciates much faster. Let alone if there's any kind of accident or major maintenance issue. In that time. Now you've greatly diminished the value of that car. Now, possibly, potentially, you may have good insurance that'll pay for the OEM replacement stuff. And I guarantee you're going to be paying for insurance out the wazoo also. And your finance company is going to require you to have full coverage insurance on that car. You have no choice as to what kind of insurance you get in terms of what kind of coverage you have. They're going to require certain insurance for that car. Whereas when you pay cash for a car, you can just get liability if you want to. You don't owe anything on the thing. No big whoop. Unless you crash it. Now, we have kind of settled on a particular type of car. We will probably never buy another new car. That's kind of a foolish thing to do. We got good deals on them, and we did it once for our lives. Actually, my wife actually bought a brand new car before we got married. I helped her get a Honda Accord. It's a two-door Accord. Again, it was a leftover. It was an 89. No, it was an 88. And we bought it in 89, right before we got married. And she was she's very happy with that car. It was a good car. Put a lot of miles on it, drove it a lot. And she test drove like 7 different cars on the lot. Everything from Volkswagens, Toyotas, Hondas, everything. Everything was on the lot. So you're going to test drive every car. First, we're going to drive this Honda. Then you're going to go out and drive every other car. Then we're going to come back and we're going to drive the Honda again. This is back when Honda was just top of their game. I mean, and they were very competitive with other companies in terms of, they weren't the big shots yet. Now, you don't even hardly hear them advertised anymore because they sell so well. So we did that, and we came back and we offered this guy, and he was a brand new salesman, and we made an offer, and he took it to his manager, and they took it. We drove off a lot with that car for a really good deal. So that was the first brand new car. So we've actually only in our 30 some years here, we've only bought two brand new cars. Three brand new cars, I'm sorry. One was a truck. Two brand new cars and a truck. And now I had bought a brand new motorcycle. Actually a couple times. Bought brand new motorcycles. This is back before I got married. Wife won't let me buy one. Because she's concerned about cashing in on the insurance, I guess. I don't know. Cashing in on the life insurance or something. I don't know. So we had this deal going on with these cars. So now this comes back to, of course, now I'm halfway into the show and I haven't started with the topic yet. Well, I started with the topic. I went off on a, major bunny trail. So kids are not taught anything about this idea of, going into debt and then crawling your way out the rest of your life. You're basically selling yourself into, and scripture is very clear about this, folks, by the way. The debtor is slave to the lender. And a lot of kids are selling themselves into slavery early on. And they figure, well, by the time I'm 60 and I have it all paid off, because, you're not only going to pay for your own student debt, your kids are going to have student debt. And I guarantee you the parents are going to pay for some of that. So you've got all this expense that's crawling up and just climbing up and mounting. The more you get into debt, the more you need to get into debt because you can't afford all the things that your neighbors have unless you are in debt. Now, if you live in a way that's within your means and you don't go into debt, you might start off living in a cardboard box. But let me tell you something. In my opinion, now you may think everybody's getting ahead of you because they're going out and borrowing money and they got a nice house and they got the nice car. It all looks nice. But, give it a few years and the troubles come. I call them the troubles. Because that's what they are. They're troubles. And all of a sudden, you can't make the car payment. You can't make the house payment. You can't do whatever it is you need to do. Now, there are a few people out there, not everybody. This doesn't happen to everybody. Some people make it through this and they don't have these troubles, certain troubles like I'm talking about. Sometimes it's because those people are so high strung and worried about it that they are driven to make those payments and not, you know, they live every day on this high strung kind of wired anxiety. And they end up, you know, with all kinds of health issues by the time they get to everything. And that's the sad part about it is, you get to this point where you finally get everything paid off and you kind of feel like you've got something. You know, you've made it. And you have health issues and you can't enjoy what you got. Now, I just recently, I think it was Seth Rogen, I believe, made a speech about a month or so ago. Kind of did this little spiel about life and living. If it wasn't him, it was somebody similar. Anyway, he went on about this thing about how, you know, live your life now. Don't talk about someday. Because you don't know what your health is going to be like. You don't know what your life is going to be like 10 years from now. You know, go out and explore. Go out and do things. Go out and you know, I see. You know, you can take that to an extreme too. I mean, there's got to be some moderation in all this stuff, but it is very true. And I've always wanted to. I've got this thing about sailing, and I've always one of my bucket list things, and this is a big bucket list thing. I want to be. There's a thing on the Great Lakes. There's an association called the Great Lakes Single-Handed Sailors Association. And these guys, they sail their boats by themselves, single-handed, and they have races. They do a Chicago Mack race, just like the big Chicago Mack race, where they go from Chicago to Mackinac Island. And they do several other races as well. There's all kinds of races all over on all the Great Lakes, not just Lake Michigan. And well, Lake Michigan is probably one of the busier ones, but they have. Of course, they have the one that goes on Lake Huron as well. I guess from Detroit to Lake Michigan or to Mackinac. And there's just different races like that all throughout the summer. Now, last summer was kind of screwed up because of the whole COVID thing, but it is something I have always wanted to be able to do an entire summer and run the entire race, the entire circuit. Now, it takes a lot out of you. And for a 60-year-old guy now, you know, I still have some wits about me. I still have the ability to, you know, I don't have any back problems. I'm spry for a 60-year-old. Dang near 60. You know, I can still get up and down the steps. I can still run around. I can still do all the stuff. Ride my bike. All that stuff. Don't have any medications. Other than hot chocolate and sweet tea. And if I can, you know, if I can do that before I get to the age where I have problems and I can't do it as well or don't enjoy it as much, it becomes more of a challenge. I don't need more of a challenge than just, you know, solo sailing around. It's challenging enough, believe me. And, you know, that's my concern is that I'll be at a point in life where by the time I can do this, I won't be able to do that. So, you know, but it starts out with this thing of debt. And now you're working 9 to 5, 5 days a week at least or whatever or more. And you got these bills to pay. Now you can't, you don't feel like you can, this is what the anxiety comes into somebody who now all of a sudden has this business idea. They want to start a business. And they can't because they have to have a paycheck, because they have to make the payments. They can't go a month without, you know, making that payment and paying those bills. and they don't have the money to start a business because they haven't learned how to save anything. So they have to get a loan to start a business. Now you're even stepping out on that risky limb a little further. Because what if the business fails? Now you're losing everything. Usually you have to put up, if you're a guy just trying to start a small business, you know, in your town, you're probably having to put up everything you own as collateral. You're probably taking out a second mortgage. You're probably doing, you know, a home equity loan of some kind that you're going to start this little business on. And now you've stepped up your game. Now you got a potential. There's a potential to make it big. Might want to look at the statistics on that. See how often that happens. Because that's a... Las Vegas might be a better option for you. So we're not taught these things in school. Now, getting back to the Attorney General and what's happening here. The Attorney General doesn't like these audits going on. The Democrat Party is terrified of what's happening with this audit thing because it will not go away. And they want it to just go away. Nothing to see here. Stop looking. And they just keep screaming louder and louder. There are now lawsuits from the Democratic Party. Democrat Party. And there are lawsuits even from some Republicans in some of these states. They're trying to file lawsuits against this audit thing. Liz Cheney has come out and called it a scam. This is a sham. Oh, it's wrong. Well, I got news for you. It ain't going away. In fact, there are at least 12 other states, possibly 13 other states, that have gone down and examined what they're doing down there in Arizona. And they're finding out that, hey, this is really an impressive process. This is something that they're doing that's actually, there's a lot of integrity here. We need to do this in our state to get voter integrity back, voter confidence back. Now, there's still a lot of shenanigans going on. Because there are still people who are trying to undermine the process. And it'll be real interesting. I mean, they've done this, they've done some canvassing that's kind of unclear. And if you listen to Roman, if you'll actually listen to Facts Matters from yesterday, you'll find out more of the details. It'd be better to just do that. I'll just direct you to that on YouTube. But here is, there's Mayor Garland, de facto Supreme Court Judge, Attorney General Garland, who seems to be wanting to act like a Supreme Court judge. And he is. That's exactly what he's trying to do here. He's trying to pretend that he's a Supreme Court judge, that he thinks he actually has more power than the Supreme Court at this point. Because he knows the law, he could have been on the Supreme Court, so he knows what he's doing with the law. It's nothing that he's impeccable, right? He's got this. I'm telling you, this guy is he's not operating out of a sense of goodness. I'll just put it that way. It's the opposite of that. He is now doubling the number of lawyers that work for the DOJ. You know why? Because they are going to go after the election audit movement. They are going to scrutinize everything that they're doing because they're concerned about voter integrity, voter records integrity. One of the things that they're going to go back over, there's about 100,000 ballots that they're going to go over in Arizona yet. By the end of the month, it should be done, should be complete. One of the things that they're trying to determine is they found an awful lot of ballots that do not have creases in them. And they were mail-in ballots that should have creases in them. Now, you can press paper. If you put 100,000 ballots, stack them all up on top of each other, you can crease the paper back, or you can take the, you know, the ones that are on the bottom are going to be pressed pretty hard again. Not going to have much of a crease in it. However, the fibers in those fold lines are there forever. The little tears in those fibers are there forever. The guy who invented the QRC code, the little messy little square box that you see on a lot of products now, that you can hold your phone up to and it gives you, oh, it just goes right to a website. That little code, the guy who invented that code happens to be a multi-billionaire by now, probably, I suppose, too, by the way. He has the scanning equipment. He can scan those machines. He can scan those ballots and tell you whether or not those fibers have been broken, because that's what that little code thing is all about. He can find those crease lines, if they're there or if they're not, even if they've been flattened back out again. Now, again, I contend that many of those ballots, those mail-in ballots, may have come in, and then they were adjudicated. Now, when they adjudicate ballots, and I believe this is true in Arizona, but I'm not positive, many times the old ballot is destroyed. The one that was actually mailed in was destroyed, and they print off a new ballot, which henceforth, that's yesterday's term, is printed out and has no crease line. If there were 100,000 ballots that were adjudicated that way, then folks, we have a problem. Now, I don't know. I really don't know how many there were. I think that there's 100,000 ballots in question, the way I understand it, in a state where there was only 20,000 votes that would have made the difference. So we have an issue there. Now, again, one of the reasons that there's so much, the swamp goes very deep in Georgia, believe it or not. The political swamp. Not to confuse you on any of you thinking that there's, you know, that Florida is in Georgia. There is swampland in Georgia. Don't get me wrong, but it's not. I'm talking about political swamp, because Kemp and the AG Raffensperger, they are. They're not your friends, folks. Okay, they're not your friends. Not your buddies. They're establishment Republicans, and strangely enough, Kemp was a big supporter of Trump initially, and I think he's just turned on him. I think that's just what happened. Everybody said, oh, I thought he was a Trump supporter. Well, he might have been a Trump supporter. There were a lot of people who were Trump supporters who then weren't Trump supporters for whatever reason. I have always been a moderate Trump supporter. I'm not a big... Now, there's things I like about on policy. I'm on board. There's a few other things that I, you know, don't like about him, but I'd vote for the guy. So Garland now is going after this election audit movement. And there are a lot of other states that are probably going to start doing this. I would venture to say that probably 8 or 9 other states will go through with this. Not all 13 of them, but there will be a good sized number. And I believe what they will find, especially if they get into Georgia. Now, Georgia has had an interesting set of circumstances. Let me explain to you what's happening here. Let's see if I can play this, and hopefully you can hear it just fine. But it's this was from this is a trailer. The Epic Times does not sponsor me, but I'm giving them a free trailer here, some pre-publicity here.
County, Georgia, is under the microscope right now. Sworn affidavits from poll workers were so compelling that they convinced a judge to unseal 147,000 absentee ballots in order to investigate them for possible fraud. However, at the very last minute, literally one day before it was scheduled to begin, county officials filed motions to dismiss and indefinitely postponed the investigation. But that was just the tip of the iceberg, because 2 days later, a security alarm went off in the building where the physical ballots were being stored. Photos from that day show the door to the building was left wide open, and the guards who were supposed to be on duty happened to leave just 20 minutes beforehand, and so the building was left unattended. What exactly happened there? And amidst all this, the mother and daughter team who were present at the State Farm Arena when ballots were being counted in the middle of the night were just issued notices from the court to come in for an official deposition. Let's go through what's happening over in Fulton County together in an exclusive episode of Facts Matter, found only on Epic TV.
So there you go. That's what's happening down in Georgia. They are just now finally having a deposition with these women who were there in the middle of the night after the poll watchers had left doing those ballots. They lawyered up a week after, less than a week after the incident. And they are just now getting a subpoena for a deposition. So there's ridiculous things happening in Georgia. You heard some of that, you know, what was going on there with the whole security. Oh, we just happened to leave 20 minutes earlier. Security at the arena where they were counting these ballots on election night also held up when the poll watchers found out that they were still counting ballots up there, they came back. Security held them there until they warned the people up there, and they shut everything down, got out of there just minutes before the poll watchers made it up to the top, to the building where they were counting. So that's what we're dealing with here now. There are still shenanigans going, and there are people behind the scenes that know what's happening here, because somebody didn't just happen to leave the door open. Somebody didn't happen just, you know, the alarm going off and all the stuff that happened in that whole process. The legal challenges that they had to face to go after this, to try to do any of this stuff. The phony, absolutely phony audit that they claim that they had. This Raffensperger came out afterwards and said, we're automatically, this is like his first announcement after the election count was, we're going to have an audit. This is going to be an audit with a canvas and blah, 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 blah. Sounded like it was going to be a very thorough recount, audit, whole thing. In other words, they're going to check the voting records. They were going to check all the votes, all the ballots, everything. No, that's not what they did. The dirty little secret is it was a limited percentage-based audit. My understanding is it was like 1,000 ballots, randomly chosen 1,000 ballots to get a cross-section of the ballots. Oh. And they were only from certain counties. Now, I don't know whose reality this guy's living in. That's not an audit. Now, that's not the way the IRS does it. When they come in to audit you, well, we're just going to look at the couple different accounts you got here. You know, we know you got 10 accounts. We're just going to look at two of them. And we're going to take some random transactions. And if those square up, you're all good. That's not the way it works, folks. I don't know how many of you have ever been audited by the IRS. Good luck getting your life back after that. It is a much more thorough process. So this whole thing still just stinks. Absolutely stinks. And I don't know what else to say about it other than this. And here we have an attorney general who has taken sides on this. And in my opinion, it's not the side of the people. They consider anyone who supported Trump to be an enemy of the country. That we somehow support insurrectionists. As they say, the wheels of justice turn slowly. Sometimes I wonder if they're turning in the right direction, but maybe as time goes on with this whole thing, there will be some more revelations and illuminations on the process and what happened. My concern is that they're going to have a report and they're going to find some very, very bad things in Arizona. And in the process of doing this, there's going to be some very upset people. Now, there won't be riots because that's not the way the right operates. We're not going to go out and tear down and burn down our cities and personal private businesses because that's not going to solve the problem. Those businesses and properties did not cause the problem. It was the bureaucrats and the politicians who would not stand up and step up and do the right thing. So, going forward, I would say let's be sure, be certain that you keep an eye on the Attorney General. He works for us. I think one of the things that was said so well by the Texas Attorney General. The states created the federal government, and they are the ones whose rights need to be protected and observed, not the other way around. And it's the Attorney General seems to think that, well, we are at the top of the piggy pile. We are the ones in control. No, that's not the way it's supposed to be. The federal government is supposed to serve the states, not the other way around. And we're changing that because we're dumbing down our kids. Yeah. God bless everybody. Have a great day. I will have a show this afternoon, I think. We'll try it. We'll at least try it. Last night it didn't happen, but it will tonight. God bless everybody.